The middle of a battlefield was a less than ideal place for in-depth self-reflection, but Anakin Skywalker was a well-trained Jedi, and more than up to the challenge. In the time since he had ceased to be Obi-Wan's Padawan learner, he'd come to appreciate the independence of being his own master. Of course, he still had to follow the temple rules and go where the Jedi Council sent him, but he was a general now, and the clones were his to command. It was all very different than he'd imagined, when he was still that little boy back on Tatooine, who had looked up at the stars and known that there was something better for him. The galaxy was much more complicated than Master Qui-Gon had let on, and while he was grateful for Obi-Wan's teaching, sometimes Anakin couldn't help but wonder how things would be different if Qui-Gon had lived. For all the Jedi disapproved of attachments, there was nothing in the galaxy that was ever truly untethered. Anakin's own unofficial return to his birth planet had proved that well enough. And now, Anakin was attached. By his oaths to the temple and to Padme, his unspoken but no less sincere promises to Obi-Wan, his responsibilities as a commander of troops in the Republic Army. The clones had been intended as a faceless mass, but already they were exhibiting undeniable signs of individuality, and Anakin didn't doubt they would continue to do so. Perhaps this new Padawan that Obi-Wan had requested would help give him perspective. Anakin was reluctant to bring someone with no practical combat training this far out into the war. Christophsis was a dangerous place, even for two Jedi of Anakin and Obi-Wan's skills, and they'd already proven that they could take the planet, only to be at risk of losing control immediately afterward. At the same time, Anakin knew there was no guarantee of safety for a Padawan anywhere anymore, and he knew from personal experience that Obi-Wan Kenobi was the best of teachers. Plus, this time around, he'd have Anakin to help him. Or, at least he would if Obi-Wan wanted. Anakin wasn't entirely sure what his place next to Obi-Wan would look like once his friend had a new student. Jedi weren't as married to the concept of two as the Sith were, but most of them acted singly or in pairs. It was one of the reasons Anakin had never put in for a Padawan of his own. He didn't want it to look like he was pushing Obi-Wan aside. Now, Obi-Wan had gone and done it first, and Anakin still wasn't sure how he felt about it. He surveyed the battlefield below him for the 100th time since the shooting had stopped. It would only be a matter of time before the Separatists tried to take another crack at the Republic heavy weaponry, and Anakin wanted to be sure he was ready for anything when that happened, even if it involved incorporating Obi-Wan's Padawan into his strategy. Maybe it would be for the best. The addition of a younger Jedi would constantly remind Obi-Wan that Anakin was old enough for more responsibilities, that he was that much closer to being a master in his own right. And getting different assignments than Obi-Wan wouldn't be so bad either. It might even give him the opportunity to spend more time with Padme. On strictly official business, of course. Anakin looked upward as a new sound split the air above where he was perched. A Republic messenger ship had broken through the Separatist blockade. He hoped it would carry the beginnings of their reinforcements, enough to start turning the tide of the battle on the planet's surface. Anakin told his clone commandos to hold their positions, and then went off to meet Obi-Wan. He couldn't quite shake the feeling that his life was about to change. Chapter 16. Bail Organa felt like he was being buried in bureaucracy. His office in the royal palace on Alderaan was roomy, and he'd never felt overwhelmed in it before. There was more than enough space for chairs, a desk, and the aquarium full of brightly colored sea creatures he'd had installed to keep his daughter from getting under his feet. But he felt like all the room in the galaxy wouldn't accommodate the double weight of responsibility he now carried. He did what he could to represent the people of the Alderaan sector in the Imperial Senate. And he did what he could to help the people of the galaxy when he was sure no one was watching. He was almost positive no one was watching him now. He risked a glance sideways to be sure his daughter was distracted by the fish, and then opened the latest of his secret files. It was encrypted, of course, but he had it decoded soon enough. He looked sideways again. The trouble with adopting the child of two prodigies was that there was a decent chance she would turn out to be unusually intelligent as well. He was reasonably certain that Leia hadn't learned to read while he was on Coruscant for the last senatorial session. But with her, he could never be sure. He wouldn't be able to keep her out of the mess forever. But he and Bria had agreed they should keep her clear of it, at least until she could reliably speak in coherent sentences. He started reading and almost forgot that Leia was in the room at all. The moon was called Ra'eda, a small satellite of an uninhabitable planet that he had to look up on a star chart. He had no idea why the Empire had gone there, but they had, and the local population, mostly farmers, according to the report, had not reacted well to occupation. During their resistance, several of them had died or been captured. All this information pulled at Bail's heartstrings, but it was the note at the end that made his heart nearly stop. Jedi activity confirmed. He still dreamed of that last night, when the temple had burned. Sometimes he was able to get the Padawan into his speeder in time. Sometimes the clone shot him too, when they shot the boy. Every once in a while, he failed to rescue Yoda, and woke in a cold sweat, with the sound of blasters and lightsabers echoing in his ears, and visions of a tiny broken green body haunting him. When he had the dream on Coruscant, there was nothing he could do about it, but accept his defeat and yet another night of lost sleep. When he had the dream on Alderaan, he would get Leia out of her bed, hold her close to his chest, and hope against hope that she exhibited only her mother's gifts, not her father's. He would stand there, cradling her, until Bria found them and guided them both back to bed. The idea that there was a survivor out there filled his chest with equal parts anticipation and dread. Dread because the Empire would never stop hunting the Jedi, and anticipation because a Jedi was a natural ally to his cause. There was no description of the Jedi in question, so he didn't know who he was looking for. He knew it couldn't be Obi-Wan, at least. There had been thousands of Jedi before the Purge. It was likely that this one would be a stranger to him and would have no reason to trust him if he made an overture of friendship. That said, it would have to be someone relatively powerful to have survived for so long, making it worth the effort to find them. He debated sending a message to Obi-Wan, but almost immediately dismissed the idea. They had agreed to no contact, except in the direst of emergencies, and as much as a Jedi survivor might make his old friend feel better, Bail knew it wasn't worth the risk. Someday, if he had a reason to reach out, he would. But the toddler in his office was all the reason he needed to keep silent, and there was another child, one he'd met only for a few moments, who needed his discretion just as badly. Bail deleted the report and scrubbed the drive clean. At some point, it would be useful to have a way to store these files, but right now, he simply had no way of securing them once they were decrypted. He currently relied on verbal transmission and living memory, which was inconvenient but generally safer for everyone involved. He looked out the window. The green and blue mountains of his home world, a comfort to him, as they always were. He would get the R2 unit back from Captain Antilles. The droid was trustworthy and capable of defending himself. Bail would just have to make sure not to leave the droid alone with his daughter, in case either of them got any ideas. Thinking about her made Bail look at the aquarium again. Leia had pulled herself up, her hands and her nose pressed against the glass as she watched an orange and purple tentacled creature move through the water like a dancer. She laughed every time it changed direction, which it did by emitting a stream of bubbles. He couldn't imagine his life without his daughter. He couldn't imagine not working for a better galaxy for her to grow up in. He still wasn't entirely sure how he was going to do all that and manage to keep her safe. He closed all the files on his desk once the message to Captain Antilles was sent. He'd get a reply soon, and until then, he would need to think about the next step and discuss the options with his wife. Bail crossed the room quietly, counting on the tentacles to keep his daughter from seeing his reflection in the glass, and then swung her up into his arms. Her surprised giggles echoed through the office, the perfect counterpoint to his deeper laugh.
"Outside?" she said, not willing to relinquish his attention, even if they left the aquarium behind.
"Outside," he agreed, and carried her onto the balcony, where he'd first introduced her to her mother and the planet she would grow up calling home. The main problem was that after a certain point, despite his training as an inquisitor and skills of observation, all children looked the same to the sixth brother. That point came fairly early in his inquisition this time because of the sheer number of children this family seemed to have produced. He was able to rule out the older ones who would have come to the attention of the Jedi Temple before it fell. But there were at least a dozen younger ones, and they seemed to travel everywhere in a pack. The report hadn't been entirely reliable to start with, either. Static-laden surveillance holos of a shipyard weren't all that useful, and he hadn't even seen the replay himself before some inept underling managed to ruin it. All he had were the statements of four stormtroopers and a lieutenant who had seen the recording before it was destroyed, and none of them had been able to say for sure if it had been a child in the recording. No one else had actually seen a child do anything, or at least he hadn't found such a person to question yet. The family didn't seem to be aware that they might be concealing a traitor in their midst. So he was reduced to this, sitting on a backwater planet, watching an unruly mob of children until one of them exhibited force sensitivity that she may or may not actually possess. More than once, he wished he could just arrange an accident for all of them and solve the problem that way. The Fardy family was important on Thebeska, but virtually unknown everywhere else in the galaxy. There would be no complaints if an entire generation of them met with an untimely end. Sadly, that was against his current directive. He didn't kill children. He only acquired them for his masters. The console he was seated at signaled an incoming message. It was a holo recording from a moon even more backward than the planet he was already on, so he very nearly ignored it altogether. Then he noticed the message's code. It was a new one, created especially for him and his brothers and sisters. It might be another wild Minot chase, but it might also be something he very much wanted to see. "Attention, Imperials," the recording began. It was a low-level district commander, though his rank was unusually high to be stationed on a moon that far out. There must be something on the moon that the Emperor really wanted. "We have detected the presence of a Force-sensitive being. Identity cannot be determined, but ability to use the Force has been confirmed by several parties. Age indicates a certain level of Jedi training. Suspected Padawan no higher. Report made according to standard procedure while we await further instructions. Please advise." This was much better than looking for a child. A child was to be captured and taken for experimentation and corruption. A Jedi, even a lowly Padawan, he could kill. Moreover, he was granted unlimited Imperial backing when it came to tracking down a Jedi, and he'd been meaning to brush up on his interrogation tactics. Now, all he had to do was make sure he got there first. He recorded a quick reply, using the same code, so the district commander would not find his rival unexpected. From what hadn't been said in the message, he guessed that the Jedi had already managed to escape, and the commander needed all the help he could get before the full measure of his incompetence was brought to light. The Inquisitor sent a longer, though still quite terse, message to his own headquarters, detailing where he was headed and why. None of the others had replied yet, which meant his claim was solid. He was not above poaching, though, so he couldn't really expect the others to be. He had to get to the useless little moon as soon as he could. With no hesitation, he closed the file he had been monitoring and marked it as non-critical. If one of the children had any power, it wasn't enough for him to find or track, and was therefore nothing to be concerned about. The Empire could always send another Inquisitor if it was deemed necessary in the future. But he was done with this dusty world. And an adult was better prey. He stood up, pulled his helmet down over the gray skin of his face, and strode across the shipyard to where his sleek, vicious little ship was docked. He had no belongings, save the weapon he carried on his back, and he was in orbit and calculating the jump to hyperspace before much time had passed.
the dust on the planet's surface, Hadala Fardi played with her cousins in the empty yard where her family's ships docked. The ugly feeling that had been bothering her for the past few days, like a toothache, or a dark spot in the corner of her eye that she could never quite bring into focus, suddenly lifted, like the sun coming out from behind a cloud. She took her turn at the toss-and-catch game and was perfect as usual, making her shot with no real effort. Her older sibling and cousins didn't question her skill at the game. It had long since ceased to be a wonder to them. Chapter 17. It was much worse than Ahsoka had expected. Every system she passed through had an Imperial presence, and they weren't just discrete bases set up to monitor local governments. They were oppressive, controlling resources and populations alike with no regard for personal rights and needs. Any overt resistance was crushed. Ahsoka had nearly wept when she read the updated bulletins of what continued to happen on Kashyyyk while she'd been out of contact on Raeda. She wondered what had become of Chewbacca, the Wookiee with whom she had escaped from captivity on the Hunter Moon. She hoped he had survived, and that he hadn't regained his freedom only to lose it again. But she was starting to lose that hope. The planets that weren't under the control of the Empire had all been overrun by crime lords, none of whom were friendly. Ahsoka didn't think Jabba the Hutt would feel obliged to pay her any kindness, let alone keep her presence a secret. She briefly considered Takodana, a green world covered with water and more plants than she felt comfortable around, but decided against it without even making landfall. There were just too many unknowns. After the seventh Outer Rim system that she deemed too Imperial to approach, Ahsoka made a decision. She couldn't go back to Raeda yet. It was safer for everyone. Safer for Kaden if she stayed away until she came up with a way to rescue everyone at the same time. The Imperials would still be looking for her, and it would be better for her friends if they didn't know where she was. She also couldn't go anywhere in the core. Even the Inner Rim would be too exposed. As much as she would like to find a hidden valley on a mountainside on some planet like Alderaan or Chandrilla, she couldn't risk it. Her life as a Jedi meant that she knew too many people there. What she could do was go back to the Fardis. The Empire was already installed there, so things were stable, but the world wasn't terribly important to galactic politics. She wasn't even sure who the senator was, despite having lived on the planet for almost a year. The guilds and federations that had held so much power under the Separatists had mostly been obliterated at the same time as the Jedi. That was what had allowed the Fardis to step into power in the first place, without allying with a larger family like the Hutts. She could dodge patrols, and she knew she could get by without raising suspicions as long as she kept a low profile and made absolutely sure not to use the Force for anything. Ever. In her heart, she was willing to admit a secondary motivation. She needed to check on Hadala Fardi. She failed the child before, and since she couldn't help Kaden, she could at least try to help someone else who needed her. If she had another rescue to organize, she needed to know about it as soon as possible. She owed the family that much. She was close enough that the jump through hyperspace was short. An easy calculation, and then she was in orbit. She looked down at the familiar dusty landscape she'd briefly considered home and sighed. She was going to have to do some fast talking to convince the Fardis to take her back, even though they had all but given her clearance to leave in the first place. She could just hide, bury her head in the dust, eat only what she could hunt, and disappear from civilized life entirely. It wouldn't be easy, but she'd be safe. She'd also be completely cut off. Hiding wouldn't protect anyone except herself, and it wasn't like she had anything to wait for. She'd just atrophy alone. It would be better to try lying low again until she figured out her next move. She squeezed the package of metal pieces, but it didn't make her feel better. Not having a mission was hard. The last time she'd landed in the Fardi shipyard, the girls had met her. This time, it was the Chief Fardi, the man who'd bought her Republic vessel, and he didn't look particularly happy to see her. "Back, I see," he called out as she disembarked.
Are you returning my property? I think I'll keep it for a little longer if that's all right, Ahsoka said. If you have anything that needs fixing, though, I'd be happy to help out again. He looked at her in a measuring way. She knew he didn't know the truth about who she was, but he did know that she'd taken the opportunity to leave when it was presented to her, rather than stay and face Imperial scrutiny. Maybe he would decide she wasn't worth the risk. There's always room for a good mechanic, he said after a long moment. Or even a competent one, like you. Ahsoka smiled. Competency was tolerable. Even less luggage this time, Fardy commented. I travel light, Ahsoka said. Well, you might as well come back to the house with me, he said. We'll attract attention if we stand around for too long. Usually we're ignored, because the Imperials can't tell us apart. But you're definitely not related, so it's best to get out of the open. The girls have missed you, and there'll be food. Ahsoka followed him down the dusty road. It was different than it had been when she left. Quieter. An air of expectation hovering on every corner, but not the expectation of anything good. People kept their heads down, and Ahsoka would have to do the same, but keeping her head down wasn't the same as ignoring what was happening around her, and Ahsoka had no intention of doing that. She'd check on Hadala, mend relations with the Fardies, and then see what she could do for Kaden back on Raeda. Hadala Fardy knew Ahsoka was coming. That was the only explanation for the girl's appearing in the door of the family house by herself, away from the gaggle of children she usually ran around with. Even her uncle noticed the strangeness of it, though he let it pass without remark. Perhaps they'd grown accustomed to Hadala's being strange. The little girl walked over to Ahsoka and hugged her around the waist. Ahsoka was pleased to see that she was alive and safe. She knelt down to give the girl a proper hug. I'm glad to see you, she whispered. Me too, Hadala said back. The girl was about a year past the age when the temple might have found her as far out from the core as she was. Her baby lisp was gone, vanished in the weeks Ahsoka had been absent.
There was a shadow while you were away.
Ahsoka wanted to ask what she was talking about, but before she could, the Fardy cousins swarmed her. Already on the ground, Ahsoka had no choice but to submit to the hugs and remonstrations about her absence.
We're happy you're safe, though, Ashla, said the oldest girl.
Ahsoka still couldn't remember the girl's name. She'd have to do better this time. I'm happy you're all safe, Ahsoka said. The galaxy's starting to be kind of an ugly place.
Shh! Don't let Mama hear you talk like that, one of the girls said. She doesn't like politics, and she'll make us talk about something boring instead. We'll wait until we're alone.
Ahsoka nodded, happy to be involved in so innocent a conspiracy if it led her to good intelligence, and fought her way back to her feet through the hugs from the littler girls. I'm really sorry, Ahsoka said, but I've forgotten which name goes with which of you. Instantly, a babble of giggles and names assaulted her. Ahsoka held up her hands in protest. One at a time, she said. That's probably why I could never keep you straight in the first place.
No one ever keeps us straight, said a girl who was older than Hadala, but not by much.
That's how we avoid the law.
Too many secrets, lovelies, Fardy said. He'd come up behind them and was laughing. But there's no problem telling Ashla your names. Just get out of my hair while you do it. You babble worse than my own sisters. The girls reacted to the perceived insult to their mothers by attacking, and Fardy pressed a hasty retreat toward his office. While they pursued him, Hadala stood quietly next to Ahsoka. She took the opportunity to warn the girl to be careful. I need you to tell me about the shadow, she said. But you mustn't tell anyone else, do you understand? Hadala nodded, small and solemn. We'll talk later, Ahsoka said. She took the little girl's hand. Come on, let's go save your uncle. It took very little to divert the girls. They brought Ahsoka out to the courtyard, where they all sat on colorful pillows. The high walls made Ahsoka feel safe, even though she knew an Imperial walker could blast right through them.
The oldest party girl appeared with a tea tray that held an enormous pot and more than a dozen little cups.
"I'm Chenna," she said, pouring a cup and handing it to Ahsoka.
Despite the heat of the day, the tea was very hot, and Ahsoka blew on it before taking a sip. Chenna passed out all the cups, naming each girl as she received hers. It was really quite lazy to say they all looked the same. Similar, yes, but that was genetics. Ahsoka cataloged each name as she heard it, linking it with something unique to each girl. Finally, Chenna got to Hidala.
"And this is Hidala," she said. "But you already knew that, because everyone always remembers Hidala's name." "She will have trouble with the law," said Michaela in a sing-song voice. "You'll have trouble with the law," said Chenna, "if you don't pay more attention to your pilot lessons."
Michaela went off to sulk while the rest of the girls laughed. They started talking about learning to fly, a family requirement, and all the other things they'd done since Ahsoka had left. Eventually, as the sun lowered in the sky, they began to wander off in search of their dinners, and just Chenna, Ahsoka, and Hidala were left sitting in the courtyard. Hidala was seated on Chenna's lap, and the older girl was brushing her fingers through Hidala's straight black hair. By this time, Ahsoka had figured out that Chenna was Hidala's sister and took special care of her on that account.
"Did you see terrible things out there, Ashla?" Chenna asked. "You can tell me in front of Hidala. Nothing scares her."
"Yes," Ahsoka said. It was important that Hidala know, but Chenna needed to hear it too if she wanted to survive. "The people I met suffered, and there wasn't anything I could do about it."
"So you left them?" Chenna asked.
She held Hidala tighter, and the little girl squirmed.
"It was more complicated than that," Ahsoka said. "They went into hiding, and I couldn't hide with them." "Why not?" Chenna asked.
Ahsoka considered it for a moment, and then selected a lie that held just enough truth to be reasonable. "There aren't so many Togruta at large in the galaxy that I fit into a crowd," she said. "It would be different if I were a Twi'lek, and it would be very different if I were human, but I'm neither. I'm not ashamed of who I am, but I have to be extra careful because of it."
"We all look like each other. Everyone in my family," Hidala said.
She had the manner of someone reciting a lesson, which Ahsoka reasoned was why she sounded suddenly mature.
"Our long hair and our brown skin. People don't try to tell us apart, and we fool them. It helped us avoid the shadow, and it keeps us safe from the law. I wish you looked like us, too."
"My smart baby sister," Chenna said. Her tone was full of warmth, and it made something inside Ahsoka ache. Hidala was too young to be so wise, and she would never get to prove her cleverness to Master Yoda like she should.
"It's probably all thanks to my influence."
Ahsoka laughed, and the farty girls laughed with her. She was safe enough for now.
Chapter 18.
It was 5 days before Ahsoka managed to get Hidala alone. She spent that time working on one of the bigger farty transports, tuning the engine and installing a new compressor. She didn't ask what the cargo would be. The farties were welcoming because she was useful, but they weren't about to tell her the secrets of their operation. Frankly, Ahsoka wasn't sure she wanted to know. In the end, Hidala sought her out, padding into Ahsoka's tiny room in the family compound after she was supposed to be in bed. Ahsoka had wanted to turn down the offer to stay in the family house, but couldn't think of a way to do it politely. Her old house had been taken over by someone else, and she couldn't sleep on the ship. It wasn't like she had a lot of options. The house was loud and noisy, but at least she could keep an eye on things.
"Sit, little one." She said it the way she might have spoken to a Jedi youngling.
Hidala sat down on Ahsoka's bed platform. She crossed her bare feet and put her hands on her knees. It was Ahsoka's favored position for meditation, and she mirrored the little girl without thinking about it.
"Hidala, I need you to tell me about the shadow," Ahsoka said. "Anything you can remember about it. Can you do that?"
"Yes,"
Hidala said. "I never saw it, But I knew it was here, in the city.
How did you know? Ahsoka asked. I mean, how did you know if you couldn't see it?
I could feel it, Hidala said. Like, I feel the sun when it's too hot. Only dark, not light.
And then one day it was just gone? Ahsoka asked.
Yes.
The little girl tapped her fingers on her knees. Ahsoka considered how best to proceed. She didn't want to terrify the child completely, but she did want her to be cautious. She wished she'd spent more time with the younglings. Master Yoda always seemed good at talking to them. She tried to imagine what he would say, and then found herself fighting off unexpected giggles when she remembered Master Yoda's unique way of talking. Maybe that was why the younglings had liked him so much. You are very smart to stay out of the shadow's way, Ahsoka told her. It's always wiser to wait and learn when something is unfamiliar and scary.
I didn't tell anyone, Hidala said. Do you think that was foolish? I didn't think they would believe me.
But you knew I would? Ahsoka asked.
Chenna says that well-traveled people always believe more things, Hidala said matter-of-factly. They have seen more, so they have bigger imaginations.
Chenna might be right, Ahsoka said. I think you are right to keep the shadow to yourself. It's easier to hide from something like that if no one else is looking for it.
I'm very good at hiding, Hidala said.
I'm glad to hear it, Ahsoka told her. But I think you should get to bed before someone comes looking for you, just to save your reputation. Hidala giggled and went on her way, leaving Ahsoka with her thoughts. The shadow was almost certainly one of the dark side's creatures. Ahsoka had no idea what sort of thing it might be, but whatever it was couldn't be that powerful because it hadn't been able to track down Hidala. That ruled out Palpatine himself. Not that the Emperor could just show up on a planet without causing a great deal of alarm. It also ruled out whatever Palpatine was using to track down surviving Jedi. Ahsoka had heard rumors of a Dark Lord who served the Emperor, but nothing confirmable. As usual, she felt rather cut off without her former channels of intelligence. At least Hidala said the shadow was gone. Ahsoka spared a momentary thought to wonder where it went. She tallied the days on her fingers, accounting for time spent in hyperspace, which always made things a bit fuzzy, and realized that Hidala's shadow had left shortly after Ahsoka had rescued Kaden on Raeda. It was probably a coincidence, but at the same time, Ahsoka had been around long enough to know that coincidences and the Force rarely went together. There was always some sort of link. She drummed her fingers on her knees, the way Hidala had earlier, and wondered what the shadow would do to Raeda once it learned Ahsoka was gone. It hadn't done anything to the Fardis, but they weren't already the targets of an Imperial investigation. Perhaps she should try to draw the shadow back. Except, of course, that would put Hidala in danger again, and Ahsoka as well. Ahsoka resisted the urge to smack her head against the wall. It was difficult to keep one's own counsel. She missed being able to ask for advice. Imagining what her masters would do was only so useful, and she always felt foolish when she talked to herself. When she meditated and thought about the quandary, the voice that came to her with a suggestion was, somewhat surprisingly, Padme Amidala's. Ever the politician, the Naboo senator prized gathering information and playing to her strengths. At this particular moment, Ahsoka's strengths were all inside the Fardi compound. She was as protected as she could be, and she had access to the holonet for news, and if she invested a little more time in making the older members of the family trust her, they would probably be able to give her a very good idea of what was going on, even if she had to construct it backward from shady trade deals. It wasn't the way Ahsoka was used to thinking about politics, but with any luck, it wasn't the way her unknown opponents were expecting her to act, either. Ahsoka lay down, putting her head on the pillow and thinking, as she always did, how much softer it was than anything she'd slept on when she was a Padawan. If she was going to learn about intergalactic trade in the morning, she might as well be rested. Fardi had been surprised when,
Only a week into her stay, Ahsoka had come to him with a request for a new job. He'd insisted on watching her piloting skills firsthand, which made sense given the stakes of the family business. Ahsoka knew she had impressed him, both in the atmosphere around the Beska and on a circuit of the system at large.
"It's not as if you can't do both jobs," Fardy said as Ahsoka landed the freighter, their last test run completed. "We'll let you know when we need a pilot. Nothing else will change."
That suited Ahsoka just fine. They started her off with small jobs. She flew to other cities on Thebeska, controlled by other branches of the family, and made deliveries. Sometimes she flew her own ship, and sometimes she was assigned a larger one. She never asked what was in the crates, so if her cargo didn't match the manifest, she didn't know about it. After her 10th trip, she was starting to think that the Fardis smuggled just to stay in practice, except that every time she dropped something off in some dark alley or behind an isolated warehouse, the people receiving it were emaciated, desperate, and grateful. It was oddly fulfilling work. She learned that the main weapon of the Empire, after fear, was hunger. She had seen this strategy at work on Raeda, and also during the Clone Wars, but to see it applied on such a large scale made her very uncomfortable. The Empire was still new, still establishing itself in the outer reaches of the galaxy, and yet it was already incredibly powerful. And she realized that she had helped build it. The mechanisms put in place during the Clone Wars had been twisted for the Empire's use, and every day the Emperor's hold grew tighter. She almost admired Palpatine for his ability to pull off a long-term plan, except for his being evil and all. By the time the Fardis trusted her with off-world transport missions, Ahsoka was more convinced than ever that the Empire must be resisted. Unfortunately, she still had no idea how. She understood, finally, how the farmers on Raeda had felt as they were forced to poison their own fields. She felt their frustration and their anger, and saw how it had pushed them to recklessness. She was going to owe Nera an apology when she returned, assuming Nera would even listen to her. In the meantime, her only option was this passive resistance, and Ahsoka was grateful for it while she sought out other options, even though it wasn't much of a distraction. All that changed very quickly when Ahsoka picked up a distress call in the middle of one of her routine off-planet runs. It was coming from an escape pod, and Ahsoka hesitated only briefly to consider her options. The transport she was flying had a big enough cargo bay for a pod, and the pod wasn't very far away. Quickly, she set course, and before long, she had three shocked, though relieved, humans standing in front of her. From their expressions and general alarm, she didn't think it had been a mechanical error that lost them their ship.
"It was pirates," said the woman.
She was the first to calm down enough to talk.
"They attacked the shuttle we were on and took several prisoners. We barely made it into the pod."
"Why would they attack you?" Ahsoka asked her, speaking as gently as she could.
"Ransom, I suspect," the woman said. She shifted uncomfortably.
Ransom was something that the Black Sun Crime Syndicate peddled in this sector, and they were not known for being courteous to their hostages.
"You don't have to tell me your business," Ahsoka told her. "Just tell me why you are targeted."
"We were underbid by a well-known firm for a large project," the taller of the two men said, after considering his words for a moment. "The only large projects were Imperial ones.
We were reworking the numbers to see if we could match the lower bid when we were attacked."
"You think your competitors would like to bankrupt you enough that you can't afford a lower bid?" Ahsoka asked. The woman nodded. "If I help you, and you save the credits, are you still going to get involved?" she demanded. She was willing to help people who needed it, but she was far less comfortable making it easier for them to serve the Empire. The fact that she was forced to make that sort of distinction made her feel ill.
"No," the woman said emphatically. "No credits are worth this kind of trouble. We just want our people back, and we're out."
The way that she said people made Ahsoka think she wasn't just talking about employees.
"All right," said Ahsoka. "Give me the coordinates." After that, it seemed like she kept running into people who needed help. The missions, if she could call them that, were random and unorganized, and sometimes they ended badly. More than once, she was betrayed and escaped only because she'd been trained to fly by the best pilot in the galaxy. But little by little, she carved out a reputation. Or Ashla did. After the first time, she did what she could to prevent those she was helping from seeing her face. They usually understood. Anonymity was the best defense she could muster. If the Fardis knew what she was up to when she took their ships and cargo off-planet, they didn't complain. She made sure the ships she flew were hard to track, and she scrubbed off all evidence of carbon scoring every time she was back on the ground. Soon, she thought, she would be ready to go back to Ra'eda. Soon, she'd find a ship big enough for her friends, and the rest of the farmers, too. It wasn't a big town. She would think of something. If she was being honest, being a hero again felt good. She had been trained for this, for justice, and the fact that she was working against those who had hurt her so badly only made it better. She was careful and did her best to resist her reckless nature, and she made life a little easier for the people of the Outer Rim. Her good work did not go unnoticed. Chapter 19. The sixth brother did not hold the district commander's failure to apprehend the Jedi Padawan against him. After all, if just anyone could catch Jedi, there would be no need for Inquisitors. He did make sure to file a report detailing where the commander had fallen short and outlining his suggestions for reprisals. But he did not hold a grudge. He was too much of a professional for that sort of pettiness. He was significantly less impressed by the non-military lackey who called himself Jenith Pilar. "You weren't exactly what I had in mind," Pilar said, winding down a long series of complaints about how he felt the Imperial base was understaffed and why his suggestions should be followed to fix it. "I'm sure you are good at whatever your job is, but I need men to patrol, to enforce order, and to make sure the fieldwork gets done on schedule."
"Then you will have to do it yourself," the Inquisitor said. He enjoyed the way Pilar recoiled from the harshness of his tone. "The Empire has other priorities on Ra'eda now." Pilar huffed for a while longer, but finally fled as the Inquisitor's expression got blacker and more threatening. That was the easiest way to deal with weak-minded bureaucrats. They didn't listen anyway, so it was best to intimidate them until they gave up. The Inquisitor called up the interrogation report on the girl called Caden Larty. She'd given no indication that she knew anything about a Jedi, but of course her interrogation had been mostly botched. They pushed her too hard, trying to scare her, and then she hadn't been physically capable of speech before her rescue. The rescue itself was almost certainly carried out by the Jedi. No one had seen anything, and the window was far too high for a girl who had a broken arm to climb through on her own. A map of the surrounding area replaced the report on the Inquisitor's screen. There was nowhere to hide in the agricultural region of the planet. It was too well patrolled. There was no cover, and it would take too long to cross. The insurgents couldn't be hiding in the town itself. They would have been uncovered by now, by even the most inept stormtrooper patrol. That left the hills. Without use of the walkers, the commander had been slow to search the area, because it would require too much manpower. Maybe that wretch Pilar had a point about being understaffed. It didn't matter. The Jedi Padawan was long gone. Her ship had been seen leaving the planet after the successful rescue mission. What the sixth brother needed to decide was the order in which to take his next steps. He was going to find the insurgents and torture them. But he thought it might be wiser to track down the Jedi first, so she would be sure to hear about the suffering of the people she'd left behind. Then she'd come back to save them, and he'd have her. He knew, or at least suspected, the general direction she had gone. He'd received reports of a series of seemingly random heroic actions that, when considered together,
he felt that a Jedi could be responsible for. He simply required confirmation. He'd hate to go to all the effort of setting the trap without making sure his prey would be able to find it. Decision made, he prepared to go back to his ship. Let the Empire drain Ra'eda of its resources for a while longer. It wasn't as if the people had anywhere else to go. He'd get the Jedi's attention and then crush all of them at the same time. He deleted the report on the district commander before he left. He hated having to reestablish his authority, and if the incompetent man were replaced before the Inquisitor returned, he'd have to do just that. It was much easier to leave Ra'eda as it was for now, ripe and ready for his return. The casual observer might have thought it a regular meeting between a senator and his staff. Bail Organa sat behind his desk and discussed logistics while his underlings took notes, and everything looked absolutely above board. Outside the window behind him, Coruscant traffic moved endlessly in ordered lines. What Bail was really doing was making a list. There had been several lucky coincidences in the Outer Rim of late that had come to his attention. An Imperial contract had fallen through. A planet in desperate need of food aid had received it. A pirate ship known to run operations for Black Sun that had been preying on passenger shuttles had been thwarted. There was no pattern in terms of time or location, but for reasons he couldn't explain, Bail was certain it was the Jedi he sought. So far, none of his tracking methods had paid off. He wasn't entirely surprised. The Jedi would be hiding from Imperial watchers, and the Empire was far more likely to employ unsavory types to do its dirty work than Bail was. He'd gotten R2-D2 back from Captain Antilles, but had left the droid with Bria on Alderaan when it was time to return to the Senate. Although the droid was eager to help, Bail didn't have a mission for him yet. He'd left the little astromech happily working through the Alderaanian historical database and hoped to have a more practical job for him soon. It's tricky, Senator, but I think if we actually went out there and started tracing these supply lines, we might succeed in finding the source. Chardri Tage was a pilot Bail had known since before the Clone Wars. He trusted the man, both to keep secrets and to plan strategy. The fact that Chardri could keep up with the spoken code only reaffirmed Bail's instinct to ask the pilot to do the job, and the fact that he maneuvered the pilot into thinking it was his own idea helped with Bail's cover.
I agree. Chardri's partner and longtime co-pilot, Tamsin, was a small woman who was not at all reluctant to use her pretty face to lull enemies into underestimating her, and then use her pretty blaster to shoot them.
Will you need a ship, or can you use your own? Bail asked. He didn't have a lot of resources to work with when he was acting as a rebel instead of a senator, but there were some benefits to being married to a ruling planetary queen.
We can use ours, Chardri said. I get the feeling we might have to do some tight flying, and it's always best to do that in something familiar.
Bail hadn't told them they were looking for a Jedi. He trusted them, but he wasn't stupid. Also, to be completely honest, he was a little wary to say the words out loud. He knew his offices on Coruscant couldn't be completely secured. But even if they could, Bail didn't think he would have said anything to them about the Jedi. There was just too much at risk. As far as Chardri and Tamsin knew, they were looking for some sort of ringleader. A person like Bail himself, but on a much smaller scale. And presumably, someone who wasn't currently late for a vote in the Senate.
Where do you want us to meet next? Tamsin asked delicately as she rose to her feet.
Bail considered it. Alderaan was out, as was Coruscant. In fact, any planet at all was too risky. He'd be calling in another favor from Captain Antilles, it seemed.
We'll meet your ship, Bail said. Contact me when you've secured the objective, and I'll give you the coordinates.
Chardri and Tamsin exchanged a look, but didn't protest.
If you'll excuse me, I'm late for a vote, Bail said.
Both pilots took that for the dismissal it was. Good hunting, he told them as they preceded him out of his office. And may the Force be with us, he thought.
Ahsoka landed her ship,
took her hands off the controls and cracked her neck. It had been a very long flight, and while nothing had gone wrong, her nerves were on edge. She couldn't shake the feeling that something was coming, something that would change everything she was working to build. She did her post-flight inspection as quickly as she could, eager to eat real food, take a decent shower, and then sleep in her own bed. None of the Fardies came out to meet her, which was unusual enough to upset her nerves even further. She made her way toward the big house, looking carefully for any disturbance, and even going so far as to reach out with the Force. When she got to the door, it was open, so she went inside. All the family members, currently in residence, were gathered in the living room, and there were 4 stormtroopers with blasters standing in the doorway. They spotted Ahsoka instantly, so there was no point in running. She might get away, but the Fardies wouldn't. She held their lives in her hands, and she could see that the older ones knew it. She thought fast. "Your ship's repaired," she said. She had no idea what, if anything, the Fardies had told the Imperials about her. It was best to start with an easy lie and hope they followed her lead. "I took it for a spin around the system, and all the kinks seemed to have been worked out." "Excellent," said Fardy. There was sweat on his brow, but the room was hot with so many people in it. "This is the mechanic I was telling you about," he told the stormtroopers. "When you keep as many ships as my family does, it makes sense to employ one full-time. She lives here, as a matter of fact, so she's always ready to work."
"We don't care about your mechanic," said one of the troopers. "We're just conducting a routine search of the house."
Ahsoka made sure to keep her face neutral, but the trooper's words surprised her. There was no such thing as a routine search of private property. They were looking for something, or they wouldn't be there.
"Of course, of course," Fardy said. "Anything we can do to help."
Ahsoka went to sit beside Hadala, who was sitting in Chenna's lap. Ahsoka leaned forward carefully and whispered in the girl's ear.
"Any shadows today?" she asked.
"No," Hadala replied just as quietly. "Clear skies for good flying."
Ahsoka breathed a little easier. She hadn't felt anything either, but the girl knew exactly what she was looking for, so it made sense to ask for surety. 2 more troopers and an officer came into the room. The stormtroopers, who were already present, straightened to attention. "We were in a small room in the back of the house," the officer said. "Whose room is that?"
"Mine," Ahsoka said, standing up again. She tried not to measure how far it was to the door, or to calculate how she might jump out the window.
"Please explain this," the officer said, holding up the package of metal pieces that Ahsoka kept under her pillow. Her skin crawled to think of their searching her room to that degree. "Oh, those are just bits of junk I've picked up doing various jobs," Ahsoka said, deliberately underplaying the value of the tech she'd collected. "I can show you if you want."
"Open it," the officer said.
Ahsoka pulled on the ties. The Imperials must have thought it was rigged to explode or something. The package was only sealed with knots. The wrapping fell away to reveal the bits and bobs Ahsoka had collected on Raeda. She still couldn't have said why any of them were important to her, but she knew she didn't want to hand them over to any Imperials.
"Nothing here, sir," said one of the stormtroopers. "Just scrap metal."
The officer drew himself up in front of Fardy.
"It might be wise to limit your exposure to those people who are outside your family," he sneered.
His eyes trailed to Ahsoka, and then back to Fardy.
"We've noticed a certain criminal element in this city, and we would hate to trace it to your home."
"I'll take it under consideration," said Fardy.
"Good," the officer replied.
He signaled to the stormtroopers, and they all marched out of the house. Fardy deflated as soon as they were gone.
"Everyone out," he said, sounding defeated. "Except Ashla. We need to talk."
Chapter 20.
"I'll go," Ahsoka said, getting to her feet once the room was clear. "It won't take me long to gather my things."
"Ashla," Fardy said, "I'm sorry we've put you in the crossfire here.
We didn't mean for the Empire to pin our activities on you. That brought her up short.
Your activities? She said. But I've been...
She and Fardy looked at each other in stunned silence for a moment. And then, of all things, Fardy began to laugh.
You used our ships to run mercy missions of your own, he said.
And Ahsoka realized he hadn't known for sure until just then.
You thought the Imperials were here for you.
Yes, Ahsoka said. They weren't?
Well, they might have been here for all of us, as it turns out, Fardy said. I don't know what you've been up to, but we have taken contracts and moved merchandise counter to Imperial regulations. You did some of the runs for us.
My wife was furious that I was putting you in danger, but apparently you could handle it.
I thought it was ordinary smuggling, Ahsoka admitted, and it bothered me a bit at first, but then I saw how needed your supplies were throughout the sector. Every time I dropped something off, it felt like I was making a difference. But it wasn't enough. The first time I heard a distress call, I knew that I could do more.
I did wonder why you were deviating from your schedule so randomly, Fardy said. Perhaps if we had talked about this, organized it for real, we could have had a longer run at it. As it is, I think you'll have to leave, and we'll have to go straight for a while to get our reputation back.
I'm in your debt again, Ahsoka said. This is the second time you've taken me in when I had nowhere else to go, and the second time you've turned me loose instead of turning me in.
You're a good mechanic, Fardy said with a grin. There aren't so many of those that I'm willing to throw one away just because of a few Imperial entanglements.
Thanks, Ahsoka said. She started to move toward the door and then stopped. It was a risk to say the words out loud, but she had to do all she could before she left. Fardy, you need to be careful with Hadala. The change in the older man was instant. His brow furrowed, and there was a determined gleam in his eyes.
What about her? He asked.
She's... Ahsoka trailed off. She wasn't sure how to say it without giving too much away. She's special. It's important that no one realizes how special she is. Fardy blinked, putting the pieces together. Ahsoka wondered what he'd seen the little girl do, if he'd ever found her behavior odd and then dismissed it because he was busy. If he had, he was remembering it now.
Do you think she'll grow up to be a mechanic?
He said, and Ahsoka knew he'd understood everything she hadn't said. There isn't anyone to teach her, Ahsoka said, choosing her words carefully. It was more than she wanted to reveal about herself, but so far the Fardys had given her every reason to trust them. She won't exactly grow out of it, but eventually she'll grow into other things.
I'll keep an eye on her, Fardy said. I promise.
Thank you, said Ahsoka. I'm sorry I can't do more.
I am very much aware of what you have done, Ashla, Fardy said. And now that I know why you came back, I think we are even.
Fardy held out his hand, and Ahsoka shook it. Then she picked up the package of tech pieces and went back to her room. She stood in the center of it, looking at her bed and the little shelf where she kept her few belongings. Then she knelt and spilled the contents of the bag onto the mattress to examine them again. The bag was starting to fray, which wasn't really a surprise considering all the oddly shaped pieces it contained. She spread them out, finding the pairs and the few pieces that had no match. She liked the colors of the metal and the weight of the pieces in her hands. What she really wanted to do was close her eyes, reach out with the force, and see if all the pieces somehow fit together. The door was open behind her, though, and she could hear the noises of the house. She trusted Fardy and his family, but there was a difference between suspecting something and knowing it, and that difference was dangerous. There was no reason for Ahsoka to put any member of the family at more risk than she already had. She'd be alone again soon enough. She'd be able to test her theory then. Carefully, she slid the pieces back into the bag and retied the fraying ends. Then she put it into the carrying pack Nira had given her on Raeda and added the other knickknacks she'd picked up, mostly from the children, who apparently thought she needed more shiny things to look at. Ahsoka hoisted the bag onto her back, adjusted it around her leku, and turned around. Hadala was standing in the doorway, looking at her with a serious expression.
"I don't want you to go," the little girl said.
"I have to, little one," Ahsoka said. "It's dangerous for everyone if I stay."
"The shadow isn't back," Hadala said. "But I guess there are other shadows."
Ahsoka wasn't too surprised that Hadala could sense something she could not. It happened frequently with younglings. They'd be good at one aspect of the Force and not at others until they were trained. Obi-Wan told her that Anakin had been found by Obi-Wan's master, Qui-Gon, because of his quick reflexes. It was her ability to sense people's feelings and intentions that had marked her. Hadala was apparently good at sensing danger from a distance. Not a bad skill to have untrained, at a time when having any skill at all was enough to make her an automatic target. "I can handle it, thanks to your warning," Ahsoka said. She was almost positive that she was telling the truth. "Your job is to avoid the shadows altogether. Do you understand?" Hadala nodded and then threw her arms around Ahsoka's waist as high as she could reach. Surprised, Ahsoka rested her arms on the little girl's shoulders for a moment, and then Hadala drew away.
"Goodbye, Ashla," Hadala said. "I'll miss you."
"I'll miss you too," Ahsoka replied. Hadala held her hand until they reached the front door, and then waved until Ahsoka disappeared around the corner. Ahsoka didn't like that she was leaving the little girl behind again, but there wasn't anything she could do about it. Her position was too tenuous to include child minding. It was better for Hadala to stay with her family. At least Fardy knew to keep an eye out now, and he would tell the family what they needed to know. What gnawed at her even more was that she knew Hadala couldn't be the only Force-sensitive child in the galaxy. There had been thousands of Jedi because there had been thousands of kids like Hadala, and there still were, even though they had nowhere to go for training. And the Empire was hunting them down. It was another entry on the list of things Ahsoka could do nothing about. She was starting to really dislike that list. It was heavy, and she had no choice but to carry it. She walked up the ramp onto her ship, both the hull and Navi computer scrubbed clean since her last mission, and stowed her bag. When she sat in the pilot's seat, her view was clearer. This, at least, was something she could do. She ran the pre-flight checks quickly, even though she wasn't in any particular hurry, and took off when she had clearance. With no real destination in mind, she set a course at sublight speed and headed for one of the neighboring planets in the system. It was sparsely populated and covered with mountains. She couldn't stay in isolation for very long, but taking a couple of days to clear her head and formulate a new plan was probably a good idea. There was no need to rush off half-cocked. While the ship cruised along, she ran a scan of the hull and computer system, searching for any kind of tracking device. The sudden appearance of Imperials at the Fardy house was too alarming to overlook entirely. She hadn't been away from her ship for very long, but it was more than enough time for someone to install a device. She found nothing, but she couldn't shake the feeling of unease that Hadala's warning about the new shadows had stirred in her. At least her stolen Imperial blaster was on board, so she'd have something to fight back with if it came to that. She got it out of its hiding place so she would have it handy. Her ship slid into the planetary atmosphere with only a small tremor, and she began scanning for a good place to set down and stay for a few days. Eventually, she found a spot with a wide enough platform to hold the ship. It was quite high up, so the air was crisp. The planet was smaller than the one where the Fardis lived, but larger than Raeda, so she was accustomed to the gravity. All told, it was not a bad spot to set up shop for a while and check the ship. It seemed to be running just fine, but since she had some time, she could give it a thorough once-over. She was fine-tuning the plasma manifold when she heard it, the unmistakable hum of approaching engines. The blaster was still next to the pilot's chair, so she had to run up the ramp and back into the ship to fetch it. She clipped the blaster to her side and cautiously walked back down the ramp. Ahsoka could see the approaching ship now. It was flying low, skimming the tops of the mountains and weaving to avoid the highest peaks. It was definitely following her. If it were randomly scanning, it would have been higher up. She wondered how it had found her. And then she realized that since she hadn't gone into hyperspace, whoever was flying that thing could have just tracked her visually. The ship was not new, but it was well maintained. Even from a distance, Ahsoka could tell that much. It didn't have space for cargo. Single pilot, she suspected. Maybe one or two crew. It began to descend toward her, which was interesting. At least whoever was flying in wasn't going to blast first and ask questions later. Ahsoka waited, calm and collected, until the ship landed. The other vessel's ramp descended, and then a single figure emerged. Ahsoka couldn't begin to guess if the being was male, female, or otherwise. The armor was dark and covered them from head to toe. They carried at least two blasters that Ahsoka could see immediately.
"Pilot Ashla."
The voice was heavily modulated.
"Congratulations. You have come to the attention of Black Sun."
Obi-Wan reached and found nothing. It took him a while to get to this level of deep trance, and now that he was here, he was reluctant to pull up, even though he had failed once again. There must be other things he could see, other Jedi he could find, and possibly aid. Images flickered across his eyes. Padme dying with the babies beside her. Yoda exacting a promise and giving him a new goal. Anakin burning on the volcanic slopes of Mustafar, blaming him for everything that had gone wrong. And it had all gone so wrong. Now he was back, in the place where his carefully ordered life had begun to unspool. Not the exact location, of course. The Lars family lived in the middle of nowhere, and it was a part of Tatooine where Obi-Wan had never gone until he had brought Luke to them. But it was the planet where his whole existence had been forever altered. He'd gone to Shmi Skywalker's grave to apologize for losing her son. He had never met her, knew her only from Anakin's stories, but Qui-Gon had made her a promise, and Obi-Wan hadn't been able to keep it. As he stood there, looking at the stone, he felt an even deeper shame. Qui-Gon had left her there, a slave, and Obi-Wan had done everything in his power to prevent Anakin's return. It was only the love of a good man here on Tatooine that had saved her. The kind of love the Jedi were supposed to eschew, yet it had done something the Jedi could not. But that was the past. What he did now, he did for an uncertain future, and for hope. He had trusted in the light side of the Force for his entire life. There was no call for him to stop now. He found the center of his meditation, the quiet place where there was no emotion, no resistance, no worldly bonds. He rooted his feet in that place and reached again. Still, nothing. Obi-Wan shook himself out of the trance, more annoyed with this failure than disappointment, and found he was still sitting on the floor of Ben Kenobi's house. It was sparsely appointed, only the basic necessities. He hadn't been there long, but he got the feeling that even if he stayed until Luke Skywalker had a long gray beard, he still wouldn't accumulate many possessions. Tatooine wasn't that sort of place. He stood up, his knees creaking in a rather alarming fashion. Surely he wasn't that old yet. It must be the desert climate that affected him strangely. He got a small cup, filled it with water, and then returned to his seat on the floor. Something caught his attention, one of the few pieces of his old life that he'd taken with him to his desert solitude. Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber. It was all that was left of the man who had been, often simultaneously, Obi-Wan's greatest annoyance, his brother, and his closest friend. If any other part of Anakin had survived, it was lost to evil and darkness. Obi-Wan couldn't save him any more than he could save any Jedi who was still at large in the galaxy, trying to find footing in the New Order. All Obi-Wan could do was make sure the child Luke survived to adulthood and train him if he exhibited his father's talents. He wondered briefly how the daughter was faring under Bail Organa's tutelage. Then he closed his eyes and took a deep breath. Down he plunged through memory and dream. There was Commander Cody, handing him back his lightsaber, only to blast him off the cavern wall moments later. There was Anakin, laughing as he made some improbably difficult landing, saving all their lives again. There was Ahsoka, her hands on her hips, her endless questions challenging him at every turn. There was Palpatine, as Chancellor, his disguise so complete that Obi-Wan couldn't detect his villainy, even when he knew where to look. He made himself pass them all by. It was easier this time. It grew easier every time. That made his heart hurt, to think he was so fickle that he could turn his back on them to achieve his own ends. When he thought it, he heard Yoda, reminding him that his work was important, that he must focus on the future alone, obscuring the past and even ignoring the present if he must. He had to break through. He reached the bottom again, the quiet place where his doubts, loves, and fears were gone. Then he realized it wasn't the bottom, not quite. There was another level below. Obi-Wan let go of Ben Kenobi's house, the last place in the galaxy where a piece of Anakin Skywalker rested, and broke through the wall between life and death. It was dark there if he wanted to take anything with him or leave anything behind, but he wished for neither of those things, so he stood in the light. His senses were sharp. He could hear every sound at once, and also none of them. It took him a moment to focus on the voice he wanted most to hear. Alone and connected, aloof and hopelessly entwined, Obi-Wan had only a moment before he was wrenched back into the physical world, but it was long enough to renew his hope.
"Obi-Wan," said Qui-Gon Jinn. He was sure the voice was stronger this time. "Let go